Hello, everyone. How are we doing today? Good. Yeah. It's raining, but we're still out. Welcome to a Lo-Fi Poli-Sci production put on by all of you, for all of you, entitled A Modern World. Tonight we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in different ways, in dynamic ways. We have six segments going on tonight, but our four main ones really are run by you. We have some top 10 lists put on by you, by some of the most important things going on to you around the world. We have some Lo-Fi Global Trivia, some of the most interesting questions about global things going on. We have some data stuff, because of course, the poli-sci class, we have to have some data. But we have our issues in words, what's most important to you. And then we finally have a little bit of an interview question segment, whenever we ask a whole bunch of questions to you, or you ask a whole bunch of questions to us, and we're gonna talk about some of those questions. But we always start off one way with Lo-Fi Poli-Sci, and it's talking about what's going on in the world today. So we got a little bit of Lo-Fi Global news for you. Off in India, you know, the largest country by population in the world. That's right. If you didn't know, India now has more people than China, over 1.4 billion people in India. And on April 19th, next month, they're going to hold the world's largest election ever, with over 900 million eligible voters going to the polls. There's, if you include even all the babies and children in the United States, there's only 330 million of us or so. They have over 900 million people that are gonna vote. Anyone have an idea how long it takes 900 million people to vote? A long time is correct. If you think we have issues voting, their election is gonna last 6 weeks. And we are not gonna find out. They start on April 19th. We're not gonna find out the results of the world's largest democracy until June 4th. So almost a month and a half after they start. Lots of questions on how legitimate those elections are going to be. But we'll let you know how that goes, for sure. Other things going on in the world. Brazil. Brazilian presidential politics. If you think we have issues with presidents and politics, Brazil has us beat. Anyone ever heard of former President Bolsonaro? I'm not going to say any Bolsonaro fans in the room, but if you know anything about Bolsonaro, he's a bit of a controversial topic. He was just indicted this week. And if you're like, well, what does a president get indicted for? Bolsonaro, it could be many, many different things, like instigating riots to take over the Capitol building. And yes, that's a real thing that happened in Brazil. I'm not talking about the United States there. But no, he's not being indicted for that. He's being indicted for falsifying COVID-19 vaccination records on the official government public health website and database, his own, his family, and everything. So Bolsonaro, if convicted, would be the third Brazilian president in a row to be convicted on crimes for while they were in office. Third president in a row convicted for crimes. And if you're like, well, where are those other ones? Well, the first one, that's actually the current president right now. He was convicted, but then it was overturned, then he went up for election, and he won. Brazilian presidential politics. Got to love it, got to love it. Some other fun news we like to do, but also a little bit of a segment that I like to call Fact or Fiction, Fake or Reality. Is the headline really real? All right, so I'm gonna throw out a couple headlines for you, and I just want you to yell fact or fiction, and you tell me, is this real news? Because sometimes you have to wonder, are people really doing the things we read about? So this next headline, tell me, fact or fiction. Denmark plans to expand military draft to women for the first time. Fact or fiction? That is a fact. That is a fact. Denmark is going to expand, or at least likely to expand. The laws have not been passed yet. All right, all right. Now, this one is kind of a poll and a bit of a fact or fiction and a bit of opinion, but to kind of segue us into the rest of the show, I'm going to make a statement, and you call out fact or fiction. We live in a modern world. Boy, no one's sure about that one, right? We're like, do we? Someone said, is that a trick question? Is it? That's partially what we're here to find out. Because you have to wonder, whenever we say modern, what do we mean by modern? We'll talk about that. And the last one for us to really lead us into the rest of the show. Fact or fiction? March 8th was International Women's Day, and this month is International Women's Month. Fact or fiction? Facts, for sure, facts. Well, as we go into the show, please feel welcome to get up, grab treats, again, spoil your dinner, coffee, Rice Krispie treats, all is there for you, provided by your Student Government Association. We love student government. Some of you are here. Thank you very much. We greatly appreciate it. But now let's transition to our first segment. And this one, we are going to have Madison and Josh come up and talk to us about some top 10 lists. You can put your hands together and welcome Madison and Josh. Hello, hello, how are we doing tonight?
We're great.
Doing pretty good.
Good, good, good. And what kind of top 10 list do you have for the good people here?
All right, so we're going to do a top 10, the days in history combined with independent verification. This is not like, okay, this is a top 10, it's not necessarily the most important top 10, but it's the stuff that has been going on so far in 2024.
All right, take us away.
All right, so we start. And remember, this list is up to interpretation by the audience. These are just 10 events that we thought were very important. So, think about it. Number one, this is the Israeli-Palestine conflict that has been going on. There's been developments with that within this year. A ceasefire that has been resisted within the conflict. There is a problem that is going on with the neighboring country of Lebanon. There is aid that has been given recently that did not go over so well. So a lot in that area right now, a lot of different events are going on that's been having a big impact on the global stage. A lot of different countries weighing in on their opinions on the conflict at hand. So that is one of the ones that is important to note. Number two, the Russia-Ukraine conflict, similarly, also still going on to this day. Ukraine has fired one of its top generals during this time, which is a big military move for the country when it comes to its defense and offensive movements against Russia. The war is still ongoing. The world is in a panic over what to do, and then, of course, every country has their own opinions on how it should be handled, which is number two. Number three, speaking of Russia, going directly to the nation itself. So, one of the opposition leaders recently, correct me if I miss the pronunciation, Alex Navalny?
Close enough, good.
Wonderful. So, he was the major opposition leader to Vladimir Putin, current president of Russia, and he died recently. There was a funeral procession for him recently where there was protest at against the country. And speaking of Vladimir Putin, in time with that, still in number three, Putin has just been reelected with over 80% of the country voting for him, according to the government of Russia, at very least. So that is a major.
No one wins an election with 87%. No one, except Vladimir Putin.
Except Vladimir Putin, apparently. That happens sometimes. So going on over in Russia, that is something to keep an eye on, how the country is going to react and how the world is going to react. Number four, one that a lot of people do love keeping track of. In the United Kingdom and in Britain, King Charles III has been diagnosed with cancer, and this is very soon after the previous queen of the country had passed away not too recently. So, given that the monarchy over there is experiencing transitions of power already, and this might be another one that happens, it is an entire process that's going on over there, and a lot of the world likes keeping track of that kind of stuff, so we'll see how it goes. And number five, over in Haiti. Some gangs recently have taken over the airport and freed a lot of the prisoners over there, and this is ongoing with the nations of the world trying to figure out what to do in order to restore stability to the country. The United Nations has been doing a lot with that, as has been said in many of the podcasts for this so far. So, those are the first five for me. Keep an eye out for those.
All right, I have the next five. So, number six would be, for Chile, this was confirmed the warmest year on record because of the wildfires and the heat and dry conditions that they have going on. Number seven, the TikTok U.S. House bill we have all heard of.
No, I'm not sure. What are you talking about? TikTok? What's that?
Funny.
Oh, do you use politics, do you?
They're concerned about data security and breaching, so they're trying to get rid of that. Number eight, Sweden joins NATO. This is important because Sweden's decision to join NATO marks a significant shift in defense policy, reflecting growing security concerns in the region amid heightened tensions with Russia. Then we have number nine, Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, and UAE become part of BRICS. BRICS is an acronym for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. and this organization seeks to establish deeper ties between member nations and cooperate on economic expansion, including trade. And number 10, this one's very cool. First private spacecraft on the moon. We can all guess who did that.
Yeah.
Elon Musk. So SpaceX, he achieved the milestone of landing the first private spacecraft on the moon.
I dig it. I always love space and politics. It's so incredibly scary to me, but I want to be the first professor at Lunar Lo-Fi University. If they can build that before I'm too old. I got one question, though, for you. When you were making this list, what was really like your guiding principle? What influenced you to like, okay, this could be on the list, this shouldn't be on the list? Like, how'd you go about it?
So for this list, we went through just events that we saw within 2024. We gathered a big list of ones that we just found on news segments, and on this specific website, it was like on this day in history, something like that. And of course, we would verify anything we saw with news outlets to make sure that they actually happened. And so our guidelines for it was really partially things that we've just been hearing about when it's on social media for us or in the news here in America, and just partially what we thought about the world at large and how a lot of these events could affect the world at large. So, as stated, especially in the beginning, this is a little bit based on personal opinion about these. So for everyone who's here in the room today, think about these. Are these the 10 that you think are the most important? Do none of these go in the top 10 for you? All of that is up to audience interpretation, and it's a very subjective thing. What we will say is that we do believe that these are still very important events for 2024.
I love it. UNO, please put your hands together for our two top 10 this year. Awesome job. Thank you. I always love a good top 10 list. This semester, I didn't do Tuesday's top 10s on the podcast, but I'm definitely bringing them back next semester because they're just, top 10 lists are so lovely. All right, so our next segment, please welcome for some of that lo-fi global trivia we love, Lauren and Brett, come on up. Put your hands together, give them welcome. It's starting to get up here. They need your encouragement, be with them. How are we doing today?
We're good.
Very well.
Excellent. So what good lo-fi questions do you have for the good people of UNO? How are we going to do this? One person five at a time, then five?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right.
And these are for all of you, so they're going to quiz you. You tell the answers to them.
All right. What year did Russia invade Ukraine?
Anyone knows that? Let's go ahead and shout it out.
2022.
That's correct.
All right. When are the Louisiana primaries?
March 23rd.
This Saturday.
That's heads up to all you would-be voters out there. I like that one.
All right. What does HDI stand for?
Correct. Group of nerds right here. HDI stand for. I love it. I'm so proud of you.
All right. How many time zones does Russia have?
8, 7, 6, 11.
Wait, was 11 the real answer?
Yeah.
Really? Good gracious.
All right. What country in Africa has presidential elections that have been moved to Sunday, March 24th?
Senegal.
Yes, Senegal.
I'm like shedding tears of pride right now.
Hello, how's everyone doing?
Great.
We're doing great.
My first question. The two largest stock exchanges in the world are the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ Stock Exchange, worth a combined 42.4% of global market capitalization. How many total global stock exchanges are there?
5.
Not even close.
You have to start somewhere. That's a good starting number there.
Close. A little bit over. The answer is 80. There are 80.
80 global stock exchanges.
According to the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, Luxembourg has the highest GDP per capita of any country. What is the GDP per capita in Luxembourg? A little bit higher.
150,000.
A little bit lower, but close.
125,000.
A little bit higher.
130.
140,000. The highest GDP per capita in the world.
140,000 GDP per capita. That means that's the average income per person in the country per year. So to give a little, comparative perspective to that, does anyone know what the GDP per capita of the United States is about?
45.
It's about 76,000. Luxembourg is almost double that, right? So that gives you some perspective on that one.
Sorry, my phone fell asleep. South Sudan is the newest country in the world. What currency do they use?
The currency of South Sudan. Newest country in the world, which became a new country in what year?
2001.
Oh, I'm so happy, so happy. What's the currency?
Well, they use the South Sudanese pound, of course.
Of course, of course. Oh, I love it, I love it.
Ireland and South Korea rank at the top of average years of education with 13.7 years per student. Where does the U.S. rank?
Considering we're in Louisiana, we have a whole bunch of pessimists in the crowd. We're like, oh.
Hey, I moved to the state for education, man.
We are happy you did, sir. So repeat that question again for everyone, okay? Let's think about this. We can do this. We can got this.
Ireland and South Korea rank at the top of average years of education with 13.7 years per student. Where does the U.S. rank? The U.S. ranks fourth, with 13.3 years of schooling per student.
Alright, we're doing pretty good. Like that.
Yeah, but I'm better than y'all thought. Yeah, there you go. The International Criminal Court has issued arrest warrants for Vladimir Putin for crimes against humanity and genocide. Who is the current president of the International Criminal Court?
To be honest here, this is such a deep cut, I do not know the answer to this one, so you on your own.
A woman by the name of Tomiko Akane, who studied at the University of Tokyo.
Awesome, awesome. How many of you knew there was an arrest warrant out for Vladimir Putin? Again, I'm so proud.
But no one knew who issued it.
And that's our 10? That's our 10?
Yeah, that would be our 10.
Well, I want to ask you. So you're used to my trivia questions that I always do for the podcast and in class and stuff. So
the trivia is out.
Okay, all right. Whenever you were diving into choosing your own trivia questions, what was your guiding principle like? What did you look for? Lauren, why don't you go first?
So I had Louisiana just to see how many people knew, you know, and just to put out there, you know, to go vote, especially for our young people. And then the rest kind of influenced by you. So, yeah, I just want to make it a bit fun.
You know, I like that because as much as I love international, I still don't believe in being, I'm sorry, ostrich, I love ostriches, but I don't want to be an ostrich with my head in the sand, right? You know, like, I focus on international affairs, but Louisiana primaries are incredibly important still. There's a lot of elections that go on here, and local elections, I mean, turnout rate is not that great. So I really do appreciate that question. That was a great choice. Brett, what was your guiding principle for choosing Lo-Fi Global Trivia?
So, well, there's a little backstory to me writing my questions. This was about 15 minutes, well, I started about an hour before I had to come up here and rehearse it. I finished about 15 minutes beforehand. I was sitting in the library on the first floor. A couple of my fraternity brothers were with me, and I was just trying to think of things that nobody knew the answer to.
That's mean
and,
trivia.
And that is pretty fascinating.
Right, like
it wasn't just the difficulty. It was both difficulty and the interest.
I like it a lot. Different perspectives, different ways of choosing, and different Lo-Fi Global Trivia. I love it. UNO, please put your hands together. It's two amazing individuals here. Thank you so much, Lauren and Pat. Next up, we have a different kind of segment, a bit of a data segment, if you will, with our two of our graduate students in the class, called Your Issues in Words. Please, you want to welcome Carson and Cade. Come on up. You brought fans with you, did you?
Absolutely. Everywhere I go.
I love you.
Woo! All right. I dig it so much. Well, what do we have? What exactly was your job? Because your segment and job is very, very different, right? So describe to the good people what your job was.
So, having been two of the graduate students in class, we decided we're going to go look at something more research-oriented into how people are feeling and whatnot, look at numbers, stuff like that, stuff that people are interested in. So we were looking at the concept of, okay, what do people care about? So we had the entire class fill out a survey of their two top most important global issues going on in the world. List them down, we plugged it into Excel, we worked out a bit of information just to see where did everybody kind of line up? What was the most important what was some of the most important issues going on in the world for everybody? So, kind of our methodology.
All right, well, what did we find out? What was so important to our class?
So, to begin, and hand it off to you in a minute, the top most important issue in the world, according to our class, is the environment. And this was coalescing a few different issues, whether people wrote climate change, whether people wrote rising ocean levels, stuff like that, is generally stuff that mattered about the environment at a rate of 20% of the class. We did 22 students in the class, that means 44 responses, and so that was roughly 9 votes for the environment. We're paying attention to all the sort of issues related to the Earth, global warming, and especially stuff related to New Orleans, whatnot.
Excellent. So that means if that was the number one with only 20%, there was no one issue that the majority of students agreed on was in their top two?
Well, I'm sorry, repeat the question.
I was just quickly saying, so if the number one issue, the most common issue, was only shared by 20% of the class, that means there is no single issue that a majority of the class agreed on was really important.
Right, it was all quite low numbers by comparison.
So but different people, different things.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Gotcha.
Yes.
To kind of touch on that point about like the fact that there was no majority, we kind of had three top like issues. The second and third issues though were a tie between the second issue was a tie between two things, so it was the third issue, and the second issue was a tie between global security and conflict and women's rights. So Carson, you want to touch on global security?
Sure. So global security, when we're inputting this data, was all about sort of, rather than specific conflicts or anything like that, it was all about just how the world is doing as a whole when it comes to security, when it comes to protection of democracies, when it comes to looking at overall the outspurt of potential wars and stuff like that. So that was more of a concern regarding how the world is doing security-wise.
Similar to that, women's rights was along with that. You know, it's one of those issues that's kind of always permeates the minds of each and every individual, you know, especially women, of course. And with things going on in the world today, with certain shifts in, be it demographics or politics or whatever it may be, you know, women's rights are under attack and are being changed, and just all that sort of, like, all these sorts of things bring fear to women. So, of course, that's why, you know, one of the big issues within the class was women's rights.
All right, well then, I have two overarching questions, and each of you can take one of these. So, to tell everyone, our class is a 4,000 level political science class. It's a comparative politics class. It's called Modern Political Systems, 4077. Right? So, it's a very specific subset of students in our class, right? What I'm curious, and I'm going to ask as far as the school goes, and then as far as the generation goes. Do you think our class's most important global issues are representative of the university? Let's start there. But do you think the rest of campus students would put similar things on their top two global issues, or do you think our class is very, very specific?
So when it comes to specifically the university, I can see that when you're looking at the general UNO, I guess, body of students and whatnot, one of the most important things is someone who's been here since 2020, now a graduate student here as well, it's definitely a lot of students who are not coming in with the typical college rank. You know, there's a wide disparity of where people are coming from, whether it's age, class, socioeconomic status and whatnot. So I think when you're looking at the UNO body, I think it's a very interesting, diverse set of opinions. You could get some older ones, you could get some more higher class, more lower class individuals. So if it's perfectly representative, I don't necessarily know. I would say that there's some issues that may have come up specifically within the class that may affect people. So that's kind of where I would put it, is maybe not totally representative, but it's still, the primary issues definitely hit a lot of the notes that I've heard around campus.
Okay. I could maybe see that. Even though if I would have to see the rest of your data to look, which I have not looked at the rest of the data, and I will. But I could kind of see that. But this next one, Kate, this one's a little bit more.
Sure, I should have given this one to Carson.
You probably should. Have. Do you think our class's top global issues is representative of your generation outside of this campus? And remember, that's including probably the majority of people who are not college students. It's hard to say, right?
Yeah, I mean, a wise man once told me, you know, making inferences isn't exactly the best political science. So, I wish I kind of knew, I wish I just kind of knew an answer to that question. I think that the issues that college students deem important is going to be radically, like, you know, neither of my parents, for example, you know, obviously a different generation, but neither of them went to college, and so I reckon, you know, neither of them, because of even not being in college, are going to have radically different views of what they think is important in the world than I would, not just because of generation, but also because, like, they had, you know, completely different set of life experiences than myself, you know, and I would reckon that goes for, you know, every person in this room. Like, I have a friend who works on an oil rig. Like, he's not going to worry about the same things I worry about. So, you know, obviously a lot of anecdotal evidence there, but it's such a big question I don't think is within my grasp to be able to answer properly.
But I think you are absolutely right to answer in that kind of safe way. I don't blame you at all. I would probably say that most of the global events that you put on your list, most of your generation and my generation don't know anything about them. Global affairs, international affairs, is not a hot topic for the U.S. population. Like, to some degree, but voters aren't choosing between, let's say, the two main parties, Democrat and Republicans, based off of foreign policy so much as, like, we would talk about it. I would be interested, too, to see how big climate is amongst the rest of your generation, especially, you know, outside of a coastal area like New Orleans that has hurricanes and things like this. Like, I'd be interested to see. So I think you both did an excellent job talking about your issues and words, and our class's issues and words. And, you know, please give it up for Carson and Cade. Music for a lo-fi poli sci show. It seems fitting, right? It's like lo-fi. You need music in order for it to be lo-fi. Shout out to DJ Kiera and DJ Naomi right over there. Music selections. Now, next up, we are moving into the interview segment, where our classes anonymously each wrote down two international affairs questions for us to answer and discuss. UNO, please welcome Darian and Morgana. Come on up. How are we doing? Thumbs up? That's not a terrifying thumbs up at all. That's exactly how I feel every time I start this. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm sweating. I have sweat marks everywhere. I'm like, oh, so nerd. That's a good call. Well, how do we want to do this? We'll take it each one, go one at a time, or you want to ask both your questions, or who wants to go first?
I think I'll go ahead with my first question.
Okay, so what we did, we have 22 students this day, and each one got to ask two questions. So there were 44 questions total. And Morgana chose two questions, and Darian chose two questions. So this is four questions out of the 44 that we are going to talk about. So go ahead with your first one, Morgana.
So, starting with a nice and spicy little question. Should indigenous artifacts be returned to their place of origin?
I think everyone else just answered that question for us. A whole bunch of yes. Yes, artifacts taken during colonial times should most definitely be returned. But this is a hot topic, because a lot of them are owned by museums. But then they talk about the museum's ownership papers. And it's like, really, museum? Who signed those papers? And who was this other person? And how did they procure that? And so there are huge battles going back and forth. The latest one I read, one of the major museums in the UK was nice enough to lend an artifact back to Ghana that was taken during colonization. Lend is the key word there. So yes, while obviously we think they should be returned, there is no consensus in the international realm as far as that actually taking place. Great question, great question. What's our second one?
This is really fun. Are we on the brink of a third world war?
Oh, God. All right, so here's it. How many of you have thought about this question at least?
Multiple
With
times.
Everything going on in the world today
nights.
Keeps me up at night, it does. I will say optimistically, we're not on the brink of a third world war. I think scary words are said all over the place as a deterrent to keep that from happening. Sometimes some world leaders make some really scary threats. Vladimir Putin, starved tonight apparently, we keep talking about him, but he threatened nuclear war last month if the West and if NATO put troops on the ground in Ukraine. That's really scary. But at the same time, that scary language is meant to say, NATO, don't expand the war, let's not get into World War III. Because World War III, there'd be no winners. It would just be horrible. So I optimistically say, sleep well tonight. We're gonna be okay tonight. Tomorrow we'll take that when it comes, okay? But I would say optimistically, we're not. It doesn't mean the world's perfect. It is still scary out there. But I don't think we're on the brink of World War III right now.
Okay, now, question three. Something a bit more straightforward, but with a bit of a twist at the end. What does it take for a country to be considered as a country, okay? What did it mean for some group in an area to be considered their own country? And what does that mean for some of those groups now?
Sure, I mean, this is a fabulous question. So it's, what makes a country, right? And there's a couple different ways we can tackle this. So in a comparative politics and international relations kind of way, and in an academic way, we say what qualifies a country is that it has a monopoly on the use of violence within its borders, it controls all of its borders, it has internal and external legitimacy, is recognized by the international community. But that's all good and well, right? That's academic, list these four things, check off the box, and boom, you're a country. In the real world, though, there is a different kind of answer. And I think it has a lot more to do with the United Nations. Whenever you look around the world and you ask world leaders what makes a country, they automatically default to, are you a United Nations member state? Period. So the UN has 193 official states that are member states, member countries. It does have some recognized territories. But in order to become a member state, you have to submit an application to the Secretary General. They submit it to the Security Council. The Security Council makes a recommendation. It goes to the General Assembly. And the General Assembly has to vote, I want to say, two-thirds vote in order to ratify it. And if all of that goes well, which these days nothing goes well in the UN, then you would be theoretically a member state. South Sudan, for instance, had to go through that process, and everyone signed off on it. If you are not South Sudan, though, is that an easy process to go through? For instance, Taiwan, country or not a country? UN member state? Nope. Exactly. Now, what makes Taiwan a country? If you think about it in an academic sense, those four things I listed, you can check all of those off for Taiwan. In Taiwan, people trade with Taiwan as an independent country still. Even China does trade with Taiwan. But they're not a member state of the United Nations. So in some ways, there is no definitive answer to what makes a country, except for this. We make a country a country. Like, a country is a human construct. We define what a country is. We decide who qualifies and who does not. And then we argue about it endlessly, because again, the UN doesn't agree on anything. So there's three answers for you for what makes a country a country.
Alrighty, I've got the last one. What were the real reasons for the wars in Iraq in 1990 and 2003?
There's the emphasis on the real reason, right? I feel like someone's kind of digging for oil right there. So that's like the face value, easy answer, right? Everyone's like, why did the US and the West invade the Middle East? Oil. But is it really such a clear-cut case of oil? Well, one, there would technically only be one definitive way to be able to say that is the case, right? And so we would have to ask both the President Bushes, please, sirs, answer honestly, did you invade the Middle East for oil? And whatever answer they gave, we would have to be able to believe it, right? And so I don't really see that as likely. We are in the realm of speculation. In the first war in the 90s, really it was about getting Saddam Hussein's forces because he invaded the country of Kuwait. So there was large international backing to stop that invasion because the United Nations invading another country's sovereign territory is illegal. And so there was a huge consensus to stop that. Now that stopped short of invading Iraq and overthrowing the government. Right, so that was the understood reason, or at least the televised reason, for why we went to war in the 90s. In 2003, this was after 9/11 took place in 2001. This is after the United States invaded Afghanistan and overthrew the Taliban. In 2003, the US decided that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Everyone ever heard this before, right? Okay. That was one of the main justifications for it. And it was the televised justification for it. And there was also another televised reason for it. And us comparativists and international relationists, we kind of like, whenever we hear this, because President Bush actually used one of our theories to justify the war in Iraq. He used what we call democratic peace theory. And democratic peace theory is the idea that democracies do not go to war with other democracies. This is something we have observed since World War II. So the idea was, if you democratize Iraq and you start to democratize the rest of the Middle East, you pacify the region and you decrease global conflict. Of course, was that and was weapons of mass destruction all just a mask for oil? We will never know. I kind of leave that up to you to decide. But those, I think, are the best reasons that I can give you. The oil thing, that's really, not a metaphor or anything, but it's really murky waters to say if it really was about oil or not. As a political scientist, I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. I don't like conspiracy theories. Because if I give into one conspiracy theory, especially in front of my students and in class, then suddenly all conspiracy theories need to be treated similar. And that's just not the case. As a political scientist, I'm driven by data. Driven by the scientific method and hypothesis testing. And I can't test the hypothesis, did we invade Iraq for oil? Unless they want to write a truthful memoir. So a question before I let the two of you go. You had 44 questions from all of your classmates. Now, what motivated you to choose the two questions that you chose? So real quick, Morgana, what were the two questions that you chose again, and why did you choose them?
Well, I chose this. Should the colonial era artifacts be returned to their countries of origin?
Is a country a country? What makes a country a country?
Yes,
right.
Yes. Which basically, the reason why I chose this was because looking at all the different questions, all of them were very straightforward. Like, okay, they could have been part of the trivia section. It's just to answer them, it's done. But again, a few of them, admittedly, may have just been a bit too hot for the current climate.
Thank you for not asking those. I like my job.
You are very much welcome.
Yes. And that's not to say we can't talk about that during the social hour. And you can definitely ask me questions about those things during social hour.
But, yes, but in this official environment, those questions, I decide to just kind of avoid those.
You are a good human being. Thank you.
So, that leaves us with these two that stood out to me.
Excellent. Darian, what was your thought process?
Well, I had are we approaching a third world war? And what were the real reasons for the wars in Iraq? I chose the third world war question, mostly because that's often trending on the social media site X, formerly known as Twitter. And so, it's always on the mind. And then I chose the second one just because I've heard various reasons for why wars happen, especially in the Middle East. So I just wanted to hear, I don't have the degrees that you have. So I wanted to hear it from someone who obviously has more knowledge on the subject.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you both so much. You know, please, hands together for Gary Montana. Take it out. Yes. And thank you all of you who came up tonight. Thank you for supporting them. And now it's really a matter of how do we wrap this up? Because a lot of our topics, although in your segments, you didn't say, a modern world is this or a modern world is that. But really, the topics you chose to discuss really kind of show us what people today in modern times are thinking. What you are thinking about. And when we say, what is a modern world, I don't think there's a perfect answer to that, because I don't think a modern world is, first off, a perfect world. Because there is no such thing as a perfect world, right? And there's never going to be a perfect world. Therefore, modern world does not equal perfect world. I think to me, a modern world simply represents a world in which we ask the questions that we're not sure of. It's a world where we say we're flawed, that things are not perfect. But it's also a world where we say we come together to try and make things better. So I think no matter where you are in history, a modern world is just about wanting a better world and working towards a better world. And I think realistically, that's what all of your segments and all of the different things you brought into it illustrate, is the fact that you are concerned with doing better than what was yesterday. Today we come together and we just talk about things. We have treats and coffees, cakes and coffee. Thank you, SGA. But to really consider what kind of tomorrow do we want? And really that's the question for us. A modern world. What is a modern world? What does tomorrow look like? I am very excited to find out what you are going to bring us, because you are the tomorrow for us. Me, I'm done. I'm just here for you these days. All my chips are for you. But as we wind down, I would like to thank several people again, though. I would like to thank SGA, most certainly, for always showing us love and giving you some of your tuition money back in the form of cakes and coffees. We always love it. Yes, give a clap for SGA. Yes, thank you, SGA. They are amazing. Right? And the shout outs once again to DJ Kiara and DJ Naomi. Please stand up, people, wave. Yes? And Jeff and Allison, working tables, or are they outside still working the tables? I think they are. Thank you so much. And Josh and Joseph on cameras recording for us. Wave, show people you are working. Yes, thank you very much. And Antonisi and Gloria, where are we? There, we're waving. These are the people who do advertising and promotion for us. Thank you very much. And for all of the people who worked on these segments, there's a lot of behind the scenes that went into making this happen. Thank you so much. And to give everyone perspective on where we are and what we've been doing, so we just made 4 years on Monday for Lo-Fi Poli-Sci. And this is season number 9, 4 years in. This is our 5th live show. We're on episode 795. And more it is about you, and you were adding to it. And now, every time we do a live show, it's you who does the live show. I'm really just up here introducing you as you do your thing. And so I'm very excited to where you take this next semester. Now, who knows what next year's live show will look like, but we will definitely be back in the fall season, people. Everyone, once again, thank you very much. Enjoy the treats. Now we're going to have music and social hour, music and munchies, as I like to call it. And stick around, talk, we're here. Thank you once again, everyone. UNO, your hands together, please.